Commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
And I'm Jim Russ.
And it's been an exciting week in technology at Stratford. This week we had Microsoft come out for a big test fest.
Really?
We've partnered with Microsoft, and they came out. We gave all their certification tests. Anybody could come in. It was a very, very successful event. We have become integrated more and more of our programs with companies like Microsoft as we've moved our whole IT curriculum to be more project-centric.
Mm-hmm.
See, the old way of having lectures and all is really not a very effective way to learn IT. You just got to actually do it, project-based, do things that actually are meaningful that the employers want. And we've turned our whole IT curriculum in that direction. The students love it, and so do the faculty. And this thing with Microsoft was one of those initiatives. And that's probably why our enrollments are going up each term. This is one of our best enrollment periods here.
Wow.
Here in January. So we're very, very happy with all of that. It's been, an interesting week in technology. Again, they've moved Google Glass out of the Google X labs. You know, Google Glass, they're going to start developing, and I think they're throwing in the towel. We'll talk about
this is the Google Glass that you brought in here. Right?
Yeah.
Why are they doing that?
Well,
you're going to get into that.
Well, I'm going to get into that.
The radio professional should know. This is the tease portion of the program.
It is called, exactly.
Now you know that I'll be sticking around for the whole
show. That's right.
Because I want to know.
Apple's programming language, Swift, is really gaining popularity. We'll talk a little bit about that. It's a developer environment, Swift, and this is a good cue for those of you that want to get into technology. You may want to learn Swift. It's relatively easy to do. And then this week we're going to feature the lady who was behind many of the classic icons that were put on the Macintosh, Susan Kare. Like when you boot up a Macintosh, you've got the smiley Mac.
Right.
She created that.
Huh.
Or on the systems key, you've got this little square device with the circles on the corner. The control key on the Mac. She actually created that, and so many other. She created like the trash can icon.
Uh-huh.
She created the lasso icon in Paint. Uh-huh. And all classic icons that we've used. It's an interesting story. And of course, it was a huge, huge mailbag.
Giant. There's a letter in your mailbox.
Okay, Mr. Big Voice, help me.
I didn't see him helping.
No.
It's tough when you have a lucky strike in one hand and a cup of coffee in the other.
He just, I mean, come on, Mr. Big Voice. One finger is not really helping.
That's
symbolic. It's not real. We got an email from Desirable in Bethesda.
Say what?
Desirable.
This was
her email address. Desirable in Bethesda.
We need appropriate music.
Yeah, okay.
Or inappropriate.
Hi, Dr. Schertz. I can't get my WMV files to play on my Mac. It seems like Apple would like me to buy Telestream to play WMV files, and I don't want to buy it. Is there a free way to do it? I did download a video converter app, but it didn't let me play the WMV file. Any experience with this? Thanks, Bethesda listener. Desirable in Bethesda. See,
it's a desirable zip code for sure.
Yeah, it is. It is a very desirable zip code. Well, desirable. This is a very, very common problem. This encountered when Mac users have to play WMV files. Now, WMV stands for Windows Media video.
Now we know why it doesn't work on
Mac. That's right. That's right. It's not weapons of mass video. It's Windows Media Video. And so when your Mac tries to open a WMV file by default in QuickTime, you'll receive an error message, you know. And, of course, the reason is this, is that WMV files use a Microsoft proprietary codec. Codec is a is an encryption. It's a file compression, decompression algorithm.
Mm-hmm.
Uses a proprietary codec that doesn't work on OS X. Oh, you know, wonder, you know, that's not really surprising. And then in 2006, just to make things nicer for the user, Microsoft discontinued producing a Windows Media Player for the Mac. Thank you, Microsoft.
Right.
Because this is this. These
this
are the,
feud
the,
that they have,
These
right?
are the big boys feuding, and then the consumers, you know, mm-hmm. pay the price.
Right.
The good news is, desirable, is that there are some free plugins that you can use. I'll give you three of them, and you can try them out. Flip for Mac plugin. This is Flip with the number 4 Mac plugin. This is probably the easiest solution to watch WMV files because it enables a QuickTime playback of WMV files. You just play it in QuickTime. This plugin was created by Telestream. It allows you to import and export and play Windows Media, and it's free. So this is the Telestream that you've got, but it's, you see, all of these have a paid version and a mm-hmm. free version.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm recommending you get the free version, Flip for Mac plugin. It's free. Now, let me give some advice when you download these softwares. They'll have things that might say free trial. That's really not a free program, because what it is, you download it, they get you to do all the configuration, and then 30 days later, you've got to pay for it. So a free trial is not free. You want something that's absolutely free that's not a trial. And Flip for Mac plugin, you can get an absolutely free version of that. The second one is WLC Media Player. I mean, VLC Media Player. VLC Media Player. Now, the VLC Media Player lets you play WMV files without the Flip for Mac plugin. Although it's only a playback solution, it doesn't let you edit the WMV files in QuickTime. In the QuickTime that supported an iMovie and Final Cut. But the great thing about the VLC Media Player is that it's lightweight, you know, and it's just a quick playback. It's lightweight. So you can download the VLC Media Player. And I give links where you can download these, and I'll post them to the web because they're kind of complicated looking. Mm-hmm. But you can do a Google search and just Google search for VLC Media Player. Then the third one would be the MPlayer OS X. MPlayer OS X is a simple but powerful video player designed specifically for the Mac, and it can handle Windows Media video playback files. It features more options and preferences than the VLC player. The only drawback is that the first time it plays a video, it has to build a font catch, which can take a while. And you can download the MPlayer OS X and get the always select the free version. Of course, they want you to pick the paid version, but you don't need that. So that was a good question. It's a common problem that people have, and I hope that was going to help you watch your videos. Desirable. Mm-hmm. I just like that name, Desirable, don't you think, Jim? Huh?
You're worrying me.
We got an email from Tung in Ohio.
Uh-oh, here we go.
Uh-oh, the Ohio bunch. Yeah, I don't know. Dear Doc and Jim, I would love to record a song for my family using my iPhone.
Oh, boy.
Is there a simple way for me to record this? Now, I want to be able to send it to them either with iMessage or text message. We love to listen to songs at our Saturday night parties.
I got nothing.
Love the show, Tung in Ohio, a loyal podcast listener. Apparently, they make their own entertainment for their parties.
Don't want to know.
Okay, Tung. I don't really need to know what kind of songs you're talking about. No, that's really off limits here. But fortunately, you can easily make audio files on your iPhone. You use the Voice Memo utility. Now, you would normally think it's just like making voice notes to yourself. But actually, you can sing songs, and you can record songs quite easily. Simply open up the Voice Memo utility and click the red button. The red button, of course, is the record button. And then start singing your heart out. Now, It can record songs quite well. Now, after you record the memo or the song, you save it. And then when you look at the song again, there'll be that share button, the share icon, which is the rectangle with the up arrow at the top. That means share. You click on the share icon, and then you have a choice to either send it as an email attachment, send it as an iMessage, send it as a text message. You know, if this is a long song, I don't really know how long your songs are going to be. If it's a long song, it could be quite a large file.
Well, their parties go all night, so it's probably a long song.
It's probably a long song, and it could be multiple songs on this deal. So you could send it as an iMessage, and it doesn't matter how big the song is. So, Tung, I hope you have a great Saturday night party with all of your songs.
Where's their invite?
Yeah, no invite. No, we're just the backroom tech guys.
Mm-hmm.
We got an email from Linda in Myrtle Beach. Dear Doc and Jim, I have a new laptop, but I wasn't able to get any installation media. I only got recovery discs. How can I create a backup image of my new machine? A happy podcast listener, Linda in Myrtle Beach. Well, Linda, this is a big problem. In the old days, you would get installation CDs or DVDs of your operating system and all your applications, and you'd get a stack of CDs that you could store away. And then if you ever had to do a clean install, you'd have all the CDs right there.
Mm-hmm.
And all you needed would be the keys or the license number to actually do the installation. Those were the good old days. then the computer vendors, they said, wait a minute here. Every time we make a CD and ship it, it costs us a couple of bucks.
Mm-hmm.
And if we wouldn't ship these CDs or DVDs with, and then we always have to keep them updated with the latest versions of everything. But if we didn't ship it, well, we'd save a little bit of money.
There you go.
And that dropped right to the bottom line. So so now they just don't ship it. And then what they do is they put all the install media, installation files, in a hidden partition on your hard drive. So if you have to do anything, it will. If you need to, like, have to do anything to restore it or restore what you've got, it pulls it from the hidden partition. But the problem is, if the whole hard drive crashes, you can't get to the hidden partition to do anything, and so you're just out of luck.
Mm-hmm.
So what you want to do is actually take an image of the hard drive exactly as it was when you received it. So, you know, before you do anything to the hard drive, no changes, just if you want to get it as it was out of the box.
Baseline.
You want to get your laptop. Now, don't hook it to the internet or anything, because remember, there are probably a lot of security updates that have to be installed. And you just don't want to get any kind of viruses on this backup. Then what you want to do, so then your goal is you want to back it up. Now, probably the hard drive, the data on the hard drive, or this disk image is going to be quite large, so I would not recommend doing the hard drive backup to DVDs or CDs. I mean, it might take a whole stack of DVDs to back up, and that's just, and you got to keep them in order.
Right.
If one DVD is missing, the whole thing's shot. I would recommend that you back up to an external hard drive. So you can get an external hard drive with a USB connection you can get a few terabyte hard drive for like $100.
Right.
The prices have just dropped dramatically. So I'd get a nice large, 2 or 3 terabyte hard drive for around $100, and then you could then back up your the image to this hard drive, but you could also use that to back up all your photos and pictures that you have. So now once you get your hard drive in place, you haven't hooked it up to the internet yet, plug your hard drive in. Now you're ready to create the disk image. You need a piece of software to create the disk image. Now I'd recommend Macrium Reflex, M-A-C-R-I-U-M, Macrium Reflex, to make the initial image download. That's going to be a fairly large download. The files are on 450 megabytes, but you can download it, and then the install at the default option seem to be okay. And then you just simply say, I want to do the backup now. It's going to say, where do you want to put it? and then you'll select the external hard drive, and then it'll say which partition do you want to put it in. Normally, probably your external hard is just one partition, so you just select the one partition, and then boom, you just let it go. Now, when it finishes with the backup, the entire image is in a Macrium Reflect image file, and that's called MRIMG. So the extension is .MRIMG, and there'll be some sort of complicated numbering scheme to that file. I would recommend that you rename the file like laptop new image .MRIMG. So you can, so at a later date you can find it. Now, then the second thing I would do is I would put that image in another location, just in case your external hard drive goes away. So maybe you've got another computer at home, another computer on the network, you just copy that to another location, so you've got it. So once you have that, that's as good as all the installation media. So if something just goes terribly wrong with your laptop, you can just, boom, just restore it, and it's just like it, just it'll just be like a brand new machine. So that was a very good question, Linda, and best of luck making that image. We got an email from Lily in Fairfax. Dear Doc, I have so many pictures on my iPhone.
How many pictures does she have?
Is there any way that I can delete the ones that I don't want anymore?
Well, yeah, right?
What it is, I take many, many, many duplicate shots, and I need to weed them out. Thanks for a great show, Lily in Fairfax. Now, the problem is, suppose you've got 20 shots and you want, especially if you hit a burst, and I'll tend to take a lot of shots that are very similar just to get, and I want to save the perfect one. Mm-hmm. So you've got to actually look at them full screen to see which ones you want to keep.
Exactly.
And it is very, very time consuming with the iPhone photo app. Well, there's another app called Purge, P-U-R-R-G-E.
Purge.
And you can delete the photos faster. It's a nicer interface, actually. It's less tedious, and has more swiping. Now, it costs 99 cents, but it's kind of nice. It got really nice reviews. And they've got a little 45-second tutorial there, and you can see how to do it. But what you do is that you, you'll get a grid of thumbnails just like the stock iPhoto app, although the photos are in reverse order with the newest ones at the top. Then what you do, you can tap the select button, and then when you tap to select individual photos, you can or you can swipe to select four across in a row, which is very convenient because when you're doing the regular one, you got to tap each picture. But if you just swipe a row, you can highlight it. Then once you put the big X on it, you can simply delete those as a block, but when you're not in the select mode, you can tap on a photo to expand it. And if you tap it sideways, it'll go to the next photo. But if you swipe up, it deletes it.
Really?
That's really convenient.
Mm-hmm.
So you swipe to the left, and if you want to get rid of it, just delete up. And so it's a very quick way to sort of sort through your things. Now, then when you finished making all your choices and you've X'd out the ones that you don't want, you can simply click the button on the upper right-hand corner. Doing so, it'll open up a dialog box, and it said, "Are you ready to purge?" And then it will delete the photos. Now, it puts them in the deleted folder, picture folder, and it holds them there for 30 days.
Right.
So suppose that you delete something by mistake, it puts it over there. Now, this also means that if you're deleting photos to try to get more memory on your hard drive,
you won't for a month.
You won't get more memory for a month.
But you can go clear out the deleted file.
You can clear out the deleted file. So Purge is a nice way to do it a little quicker.
How do you say that again?
Purge. Purge. We got an email from Nan in Atlanta. Dear Dr. Schertz, I have a laptop that I use for work at home. Now, when my son visits, he wants to use it to check email and surf the web. Is there a simple way to give him access so he can't see all the files and activity on my account?
Ah.
Love the show, Nan in Atlanta. Well, of course, let's talk about this. Physical access actually means they can get at anything they want, because there are tools that you can. There are tools that you can basically reboot the machine on a CD or DVD, and then you can boot up off that DVD, and it gives you complete access. So there are tools where you can change the admin password and do anything you want. So if they have physical control of your computer, actually there is no real security.
Okay.
But this is like, but you're not really leaving your laptop at the bus station. This is your son.
Mm-hmm.
So chances are he's not going to be coming in with all of these hacking tools to try to get at your machine. You just don't want to, you know, to have your Facebook account, you know, mixed up with his Facebook account and that sort of thing. So we've got the same problem, too, at ours. When our son comes up, you know, he wants to use the laptop. People come over and just want to check their email very quickly. So what I've done on my laptop, I've created a guest account. So I got a Rick account. I got a Marianne account. I've got a guest account. Now, the guest account I give no admin rights to at all. And so what I do, if I want to let somebody use my laptop, I just log out of my account and let them log into the guest account. And mm-hmm. then everything is pretty secure. And so if he just uses the Windows interface, none of the information in the other accounts is available.
I think you should set up a library kiosk at home. So if a visitor comes over, they can have their own little Dr. Schertz visitor center.
Center. I could actually have computers lined up in the living room, and then we invite over the neighbors instead of sitting around chatting.
You sit around computers.
Everybody could log on to Facebook and we could message each other.
Right. That way you wouldn't have to talk to each other.
And we could all be facing the wall, mm-hmm. and we could just be and we could pretend like we're chatting away. Yeah, that may.
Or you could just stay home and do that.
I'm actually thinking that, you know, not many people would come over and visit me if I did that. Now,
unless you fed them.
No, that's true. Food will bring them over. Mm-hmm. Now, here's the thing, Nian, about this thing. You've got to have the latest version of antivirus software and anti-malware installed. Because if your son is, like, surfing around
uh-huh.
certain websites, uh-huh. he might pick something up.
Those kind of.
So websites. You know you don't want that stuff to get on your computer. So you want to make certain you got the latest antivirus stuff always going and active. We got an email from Don in Fairfax. Dear Doc and Jim, my son just graduated from a name school with a degree in computer science and is having trouble landing a job. All the companies want experience, but he's never worked. He's getting frustrated, and I'd like to give him some advice. What do you suggest? I enjoy listening to the podcast every week on the way to work. Don in Fairfax. Well, Don, what your son needs to do is create a portfolio of projects. Going to school and getting a bunch of A's is not what employers want. Because what they've discovered is that if you've got some project or some application that you've got to get programmed, really, those A's don't help you do it. You've got to actually have real project experience. What they want to see is the ability, is your son's ability to actually complete a technical project. They want to see how he thinks about it, his approach, and how he would do it. Now, he could create, and here's the thing, he doesn't have to have a job to create, to get experience working on projects. This whole thing that you can't get experience without a job, and then you need a job to get experience, this conundrum, that's just not true.
Mm-hmm.
If you're really motivated in technology, you should be working on some projects. Like, you know, when I wanted to learn databases, I wrote the first, you know, student information system at Stratford. I just taught myself this was a long time ago. I taught myself DBase 4 scripting language. And I wrote a very sophisticated student information system a long time ago, and that was my first project with databases. Or when I wanted to learn PHP, which was, you know, a scripting language for websites, I basically wrote a Stratford website all in PHP, and I just taught myself PHP. So the way to do things is actually work on projects. So he could create a database application with MySQL, which is an open source free database that he could download. He could create a database-driven website using PHP with a MySQL database at the back end. He could load it on his own Apache web server that he'd run in the basement. So he'd create his own website. He could get a student version of Oracle and create applications. He could create virtual servers And then he could play around with all kinds of virtual servers. He could create firewalls. He could do all kinds of things. He could download hacking tools, and he could become a white hat hacker, and he could hack into his own servers. I say that really, if you start doing this hacking, you really don't want to just go out in the world and start hacking somebody else's server,
right?
Unless you get their permission,
yes,
because you could get in trouble.
Really.
Yeah, because they can track you down. Now, once he's picked some projects that he's interested in working on, he should join some user groups. Like you join MySQL user group, Oracle user group. There's all kinds of Cisco user groups. Join a user group. Then you go to the user group, and then you can talk about your project. What you don't want to do is go there and ask everybody for a job. Nobody will talk to you. But they love to give advice. Everybody loves to give advice. So you ask them advice on your project. And then what happens is that they see your enthusiasm, your son's enthusiasm, and it's kind of contagious. And then what happens is people say, we got an opening down here. It's not advertised, but you're just the right kind of guy for that. And so you sort of get the job through a referral. Now he should subscribe to some industry magazines just to keep abreast of the field. A lot of these are free. I call these rags, industry rags. And he should use the techniques in What Color Is Your Parachute by Dick Bowles. And the key element that Dick talks about in that is that, flooding the market with resumes really doesn't work. You do informational interviews. So you pick some specific companies you're interested in, and you go out and get career advice. What should I do? What should I learn? And people will give you, 15 or 20 minutes of time to give you some career advice on where you should go. What they don't like is that they don't like it, have to be put in a situation where you're asking for a job. You don't want to do that. But these informational interviews give you enormous insight, and you can actually be quite successful with this. These are all the techniques that we teach our students. This, by the way, is why we've gone to project-centric courses. Mm-hmm. So the students, when they get out of the Stratford IT programs, they just don't have a transcript with grades. They got a portfolio of projects.
Well, that's what life is, right? It's a series of projects.
It's a series of projects. And we make the students work in teams. They work solo. They've got And the nice thing about teamwork, there's always one person on the team that's sandbagging it. I mean, even when you're at work and you have to develop the social skills to interact on a team, because what really matters is that the project gets out the door on time.
Right.
So you've got to negotiate work with and through other people to get it done. And so working on group projects helps you develop those skills, which businesses like. And then there are also solo projects, so you can really show how great you are. But that was a great question. We have had students. We had two friends, for instance. One went to Stratford, and one went to a big name university in the area. I'm not going to give the name. So when our student graduated his master's in software engineering, he got a great job. His friend who went to the big name university could not get a job, so he came to Stratford and got a second master's degree, and then he got a great job.
Wow.
But I'm giving you, Don, the advice where your son doesn't have to come to Stratford. He can just do it on his own. And that is a tried and true method and a great question. And I'm glad you're going to give your son some advice. It sounds like he needs it. Listen, we love your emails. Email us at techtalk@stratford.edu, and we'll answer them on the show, or else we may actually write back directly and answer them.
It is Saturday morning, and you're listening to Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM, HD2.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment. What's the latest innovation in IT degrees? It's the Stratford University innovative approach that turns marketable skills into an employable edge to get you hired faster in today's hottest fields like cybersecurity, data mining, and mobile networking. At Stratford, our IT instructors bring their own business world experience right into the classroom with real-world problem-solving projects structured like a real business, empowering you with real hands-on skills so you can hit the ground running doing exactly what you learn in the classroom. classroom, right in the workplace. It's all part of our proven learn-by-doing approach to IT. Every class, every degree, every day. We offer bachelor's, master's, and associate degree programs at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Contact us today at stratford.edu. Or give us a call at 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge of Stratford University talking technology. And now it is time for... thank you, Mr. Big Voice. Today we're going to feature Susan Kare, K-A-R-E. Susan Kare is an artist and graphic designer who created many of the interface elements for the Apple Macintosh in the 1980s. Susan Kare was born 1954 in Ithaca, New York. She took painting lessons as a young girl, not too unsurprisingly. She graduated from Harrington High School in Philadelphia in 1971. She received her Bachelor of Arts in Art from Mount Holyoke College in 1975 and her PhD from New York University in 1978. So, you know, her parents were quite happy with her. She just shot right through and got all of her degrees all lined up. Now, after graduation, Susan moved to California where she took a job as a curator at the Fine Arts Museum of San Francisco. But she quickly found out that she was on the wrong side of the stick. She was actually interviewing artists and showing their artwork. And she said, you know, I'd rather be in a studio. What did I get all these degrees in art and I'm just doing curation? I should be creating art. So she was all frustrated and she finally managed to get an artwork commission from an Arkansas museum to sculpt a razorback hog out of steel. Now, the razorback hog, of course, is the mascot of University of Arkansas.
I know this all too well, yes.
You know that. I got my bachelor's degree from University of Arkansas.
Did you really? I did not know that.
And so we'd, we'd go to the games, and of course,
sidebar.
You call the hogs Pig Suey. So they go, Pig Suey, Pig Suey. I mean, I guess, so I'm sitting here, and they've got this hog in a cage, and they take it around the thing. See, at one time, Razorback hogs were fierce animals when they were wild.
Right.
But, I mean, it just looks like a pig.
A pig. Well, what, does the Razorback hog have some sort of thing running down its spine that differentiates it from other hogs? Or?
I didn't really notice.
You went to the school.
I know, I went to the school. You know, to tell you the truth, when I was there, I didn't really much care about the whole deal.
You were busy doing work.
I was busy. I had my office in the physics department. I was Mr. Nerdy physics guy.
So
I really wasn't into the Razorback hog scene too much. But when I was reading this, is bringing back memories. Sorry, Susan, that I diverted from your story there.
I'm surprised you didn't wear your letter sweater too.
Yeah, I should have done that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So she got this commissioned artwork. Very happy with that. Now in 1982, while she was working on this project in her garage in Palo Alto, it seems like everything starts in a garage in Palo Alto. She got a call from a high school friend, Andy Hertzfeld. Now, Andy was the lead software architect for the Macintosh operating system, and he offered her a job. So he said, okay, that'd be interesting. So I gave a talk about her life. I was watching it last night, actually this morning. And she said, you know, well, she said, well, I'll go down there. She said, I really don't know anything. She said, I know nothing about computers.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know anything about fonts. And so she got a whole bunch of books on fonts, and she started reading about fonts, reading about computer interfaces. And then she went to her interview, and she had all of her books there. And so what they did, these were all pixelated icons. They were like 32 pixels by 32 dots by 32 dots. Each dot is a pixel. And so they just brought out some graph paper and they said, here, why don't you just draw some icons here and we'll watch you. So they didn't really care about all the stuff she had from these books. They just wanted to see what she could produce something. So she produced some interesting little graphics. At the interview, they said, okay, you're hired. So she started there. Her first assignment was developing fonts for the Macintosh operating system. Now, at the time, all the digital typefaces were monofaced. You know, so the width of the letter I was the same as the width of the letter D.
Right.
So that meant the I had a lot of space around it because it was kind of skinny. So it would make sense to kind of crowd it in and make, and if a letter's skinny, reduce the amount of space allocated. That's called a proportional font instead mm-hmm. of a fixed font. Well, the reason they had the fixed fonts is that everybody thought of the typewriter. You type an I, and then it goes over one space. Then you type a J, it goes over one space. So they made all the digital fonts like typewriter
right.
fonts.
It's because the typewriter doesn't differentiate.
That's right. Well, Steve Jobs had studied typography, and when he was, you know, he audited these classes, and he said, I want to get beautiful fonts, digital fonts, on the Macintosh, just like we have for books. And so she had to create these fonts. And so she was a designer of many typefaces, icons. She also made all the original marketing material for the original Macintosh operating system. Now, Steve Jobs named these fonts after cities. You know, and so, like, you know, you've got the Geneva font. These are all named after cities.
I have learned something here today because I thought these fonts pre-existed computers.
No.
No.
She created the Chicago typeface.
Mm-hmm.
She created the Geneva typeface. And then she created different fonts that were named after the stops on the Philadelphia subway line.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so they were making proportional digital fonts for the first time. And they were naming them.
I had no idea.
This is actually, she kind of stumbled into groundbreaking work. And she had the inspiration of Steve Jobs, and she had this operating system opportunity. So she created the Chicago typeface, which was the most prominent user interface type font that was used in the classic Mac operating system. It was also the typeface used for the first four versions of the Apple iPod. Then she created the Geneva typeface. Then she created the Monaco typeface. These are all named after cities.
And I'm looking at the Chicago typeface right now.
She also created Claris the dog cow. Now, this is this dog that has stripes that have dots on it that look like a cow. And if you go to the page orientation in, say, a Macintosh word processor, and you want to do either, you know, you want to select either, you know, vertical or horizontal orientation, you'll actually see the piece of paper, and the Claris the dog cow will be there. So she created Claris the dog cow, which became very famous. If you Google Claris the dog cow, he's got his whole Wikipedia page.
As I'm doing right now.
He's very famous. Once you see it, she also created the Happy Mac, which is that smiling computer that's displayed whenever the Macintosh boots up.
Mm-hmm.
She on the command key. On the Apple keyboard, you've got this symbol, which is a square with four circles on the corner. That's the command key. She created that, and she got it from a book of symbols from Switzerland, actually. And it turns out that what's kind of clever, if you look at a castle from above, it looks sort of like the command key with turrets on the four corners.
Right, yeah.
And, of course, the castle is the command headquarters.
Right.
So that's
there you go.
So she liked simplicity, but then she liked meaning behind the kind of things that she created. Now, descendants of her can be seen in many computer graphics tools. You know, like in if you're doing graphic editing, you've got this lasso that you go in and you'll sort of put a circle around something you want to grab. the, you know, in the paint programs, they got the lasso where you can grab a certain region and either delete it or move it. So she created the lasso icon, or the little grabber where you want to go and grab something and move it. She created the grabber icon. She created the paint bucket. These are all concepts and icons that just didn't exist before.
Genius. How have you not talked about this woman before? This is all so...
I mean, it really was quite interesting. Well, it's because we've talked to the top-level people, and now
right.
After I've done 200 profiles in IT, I'm getting now to the second tier of folks.
I'm stumbling on something on the web, and I don't know where this is yet, but there's an icon garden somewhere where they have giant icons cut out in a garden. Where is this?
It's at
Apple's plant.
So then what she did, you remember when Steve Jobs got thrown out of Apple?
Right.
Well, she left at the same time, and she joined Next Computer, which Steve started. She joined Next Computer as a designer. And then while she was at Next, she worked with clients like Microsoft and IBM. So, for instance, for Microsoft, she created the card deck for Solitaire. All the cards in Solitaire, Susan Kare created.
Wow.
And she created a number of the design elements for Windows 3.0. And it's, in fact, a lot of the design elements and the symbols in the control panel are still unchanged to this day. Mm. She created them for the Windows. They were essentially unchanged until Microsoft XP. Then they started making some changes. She created icons and design elements for Operating System 2. And she also, for Easel, she contributed the icons to the Nautilus file manager. In 2003, she was one of the founding team members of Glam Media, now Mode Media. In February 7th, 2007, she produced the icons for the GIFT feature of the popular social networking site Facebook. You know these GIFs?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's got these big... The most popular icon she made is those big red lips.
Oh, really?
The big red lips kind of at an angle.
Mm-hmm.
And the people pay a dollar for this. You should pay a dollar and you give somebody a kiss. And they had many other, and she found things related to love, and there were some fairly interesting love icons there that I'm not going to get into.
Okay.
And then she also, and Cute also won, like panda bears and teddy bears won. And she made lots and lots of these gift icons for Facebook. And she said she really enjoyed seeing which ones would sell and which ones wouldn't sell. In August 2012, she was an expert witness called by Apple in the patent infringements against Samsung. Now, she's currently heads a digital design practice in San Francisco. And you can go to, and she sells signed prints of her icons. So you can go to careprints.com. And so you'll see this 64-bit by 64-bit icon
mm-hmm.
in a lithography, and then it's signed. And so she it was actually interesting to, and if you Google her, she gave a 20-minute presentation. It's nice to see her, the thought process she goes through in creating these icons. She said there was a guy who, and she talked about a guy who used to do comic books. And he said, when you want to get a character in a comic book, you want the simplest features that make it understandable. Because there's too much detail, it looks like, say, one person.
Mm-hmm.
If you take away some of the detail, it looks like 1,000 people. If you take away more of the detail of the face, it looks like 1,000,000 people. So if you've got the simplest design, everybody sees themselves in it. And the simplest designs are more long-lasting.
Mm-hmm.
And so the key was to get simplicity yet meaning.
Right.
And she said one of the things with the Macintosh computer, she could teach somebody to use a Mac in 20 minutes. She said because the icons were so memorable that she could explain what the icon did and people could remember it because the icon made sense. You didn't have to remember some arcane DOS command. And so the icons became sort of an integral part of the friendliness and usability of the Macintosh computer and the whole Apple brand.
Fascinating story.
There you go. Susan Kare.
She's got to be worth $1 billion.
I'm certain she's worth quite a bit. She was the 3,900 employee.
Mm-hmm.
She was like 390,000 people. No, 3,900 people were hired before her. So she was right there in the very beginning. Yep.
Hope you're paying attention, because you can take all of the knowledge you just learned from Dr. Schertz and turn it into free food. Coming up on the Pop Quiz here on Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM, HD2.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment. Change your life. Put your talents out there on your terms. Get full credit for your ideas and hard work, and set your own pay. If you're ready to be your own CEO, Stratford University's life-changing Masters in Entrepreneurial Management program can show you how to develop and launch your business. From writing a solid business plan to financing, legal issues, staffing, even branding and marketing. Let Stratford show you the ropes and walk you over the pitfalls of running your own business. Choose from online or in-classroom courses at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Change your life. Take charge of your future on your own terms. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
And now it's time for Washington's most popular and longest running radio game show, Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now here's your host and star of our show. No, it's not Gene Rayburn. It's not Alex Trebek. It's not Richard Dawson. It's Dr. Richard Schertz.
Welcome back to Classroom of the Airways. Those of you that are new to the show might have thought this was a radio show.
No, it's not.
It's the Classroom of the Airways.
I've been
and
corrected.
If it's a classroom, you must learn. And if it's a classroom, we must assess the learning outcomes. So there will be an assessment, which
test.
We call a pop a quiz.
Test.
If you get the correct answer to the pop quiz, you win two tickets to fine dining, the Escoffier Dining Room or the Karam Dining Room.
Problem is, it's all or nothing. We can't grade on a curve.
No,
it's
either A plus or F. So it turns out that one person gets an A plus, everybody else gets an F.
There you go.
It is really a tough class of grading system that we have
it's
here.
It's not a fair world.
Okay, earlier in the show, I was talking about Susan Kare, K-A-R-E. She was the artist and graphic designer that created many of the interface elements for the Macintosh computer and other computer systems. She, in particular, created the first proportional digital fonts. How did they name those fonts, and where did the names of those fonts come from?
Well, that's a darn good question.
Yes.
If you have the answer to that question, you need to call us right now. If you're calling from west of Ithaca, New York, it's 877-936-9333. Calling from east of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, it's 877-936-9333. Everybody else, anywhere else, can call us on the wild card line, 877-936-9333, but I'm sure you've got another wise idea.
If you're calling from Hanoi, you can simply call on Skype, and the nice thing about that is that your call will be fully encrypted. You simply connect to Tech Talk Radio 1. It'll be forwarded to the studio free of charge.
Well, there you go.
There, yeah.
So
right.
Dial now. Dial carefully, 877-936-9333, or that Skype thing he was talking about.
Marriott finally threw in the towel on blocking Wi-Fi hotspots. You see, what Marriott does, they, of course, you go there and you sign up at the Marriott, and unless you are, one of the elite members, you've got to pay like $12 a day for internet access.
Mm-hmm.
And they just love that revenue stream. Well, it turned out that people were taking their cell phones and they were turning on a hotspot in their cell phone. And the cell phone was connected to the LTE network, and then they would take their laptop and log into their cell phone.
Oh, good grief.
And they would bypass the Marriott network, and Marriott would lose $12
money.
A day. And so what Marriott did, they set up a transmitter there that would block all rogue hotspots, so people couldn't use it. Now, they said it was to protect against malicious activity. That was their party line. But actually, hotel Wi-Fi networks, first of all, are not encrypted. Many times they are penetrated by hackers, and hackers just love to penetrate these Wi-Fi networks because there are a lot of corporate executives on, especially the more expensive hotels, and they want to, and they'd like to get some sort of keystroke logger and get all their password information. So this whole protection thing is bogus. Whereas if you have a hotspot with your phone, that's an encrypted connection because there's a password. So there was huge uproar over this. Guests complained about it. They threatened the lawsuit. There are all kinds of articles about it. Marriott listened, and they decided to reverse course. So they will now no longer block personal hotspots with your mobile phone. Marriott made the right choice.
There you go. All right, we have somebody to talk to on the phone, and I think this is somebody we have not spoken with before. Let's go to line one. This is Amy, who is calling us from Fairfax, Virginia. Amy, good morning. How are you? Oops, hang on. I have to press the button first. Hi, Amy.
Hi.
All right, Doc.
Yeah, early in the show, we talked about Susan Kare, the graphic designer, created many of the interface elements for the Apple Macintosh, and she made proportional fonts. How did they come up with the names for these fonts?
She took them from major cities such as Chicago, Geneva, Monaco, and stops on the Philadelphia subway line.
That is correct. What a complete answer.
I love it when people pay attention.
Very
Amy,
good.
Thank you so much. Thank you for calling. Are you a first-time caller?
Nope, I've called before.
You've called before. Well, thanks for listening. Hang on a second. Andrew will take your information, and we will continue on with the show. Doc, because of the time,
let's just
continue on, shall we? Shall we march forward?
Yeah.
Okay, let's just do that.
I want to talk about what I'm calling the app of the week. I think this is a fantastic idea.
Mm-hmm.
App of the week. It's called Be My Eyes. Now, Be My Wise asks people to do exactly as the name suggests. Volunteers sign up to receive video calls from visually impaired people when they need help identifying things. Volunteers can speak to their caller, seeing what's in front of the blind person, and help them read labels, figure out if their milk is expired, read street signs, whatever they need help discerning. It's like a one-way Skype call. So Be My Eyes has said, you go to their website for Be My Eyes, it said they've already helped over 1,200 blind people, and it was just launched a few months ago in Denmark, but it's now available for download in the U.S. and other countries. RoboCats now also working on an Android version. This is a fantastic idea. It's crowdsourcing help, so you take your iPhone, and what you're looking at, you basically, the blind person or the visually impaired person opens up the application, and then they point the camera at what they want to see.
Mm-hmm.
And then they press a button that says, I need help. And it goes out to one of the, you know, group of the volunteers. And if you're not available, you just don't answer. But if you're available, you answer. And then you just say, well, what you're looking at here is milk. And say, get a little closer. No, the milk's expired. Or this is what the road sign says.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like crowdsourced help for visually impaired. It's such a clever idea, and it's a perfect blending of technology with need. So that is my app of the week, Be My Eyes. Now, Google Glass has moved out of the Google X research facility, and it's become a standalone project. Now, many people say it just was a failed project.
Mm-hmm.
Google doesn't want to say that. It's now going to be overseen by former Apple executive and Nest founder Tony Fadell. Tony Fadell, of course, he was at Apple, and he's the man behind the iPod, really, initially. And then he founded Nest, which are these smart thermostats or smart fire detectors. And he's a very good kind of interface sort of guy. But they moved it out of the research labs, and they're going to put a halt to the Explorer program on Monday, February 19th, which would be this Monday. So after this Monday, you can't even buy it. Now, they're going to continue to sell it to businesses, developers, educational institutions, and they plan to invest in Glass at Work for enterprise developers. So what actually happened here? Glass gone off to really a bad start. It turned out that just people didn't like being around some nerdy guy who could...
It looks weird.
Who could just video them surreptitiously and they wouldn't even know it.
Or is it possible that people didn't want to be that nerdy guy?
Well, there were a lot of people that volunteered to the Explorer program. I mean...
People didn't want to pay to be the nerdy guy.
I had a glass. I liked
it. I'm not casting any aspersions here.
No, I can tell you one thing. I would not wear it to a bar, for instance.
Be a good way to
broken. You know, if I'd wear it to a bar, I'm just thinking people would not like that at all.
No.
And so the thing is, glass as a consumer product got enormous backlash, and people that wore them were called glass holes. and so it was clear that the thing was never going to really... And it really wasn't that... the interface was kind of clunky. All of your emails were like on cards and kind of a rotation. You keep having to touch the thing to rotate through everything. And so it was if you had a lot of stuff that you were tracking, it wasn't a very efficient way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'd have to talk to it like, okay, glass. And you talk to it. Well, it just doesn't work. And you're in a in your grocery line. You say, okay, glass, and you just look like a total idiot talking to your glasses. And so it just really didn't work as a consumer product. I guess it was a fairly big failure, but it turned out for many business applications, it's fantastic. For instance, telemedicine. You could have someone who was just a nurse would be looking at a patient, and a doctor could be looking what she's looking at remotely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So these were used like doctors were in operating rooms, so people could see what the doctor saw as he was doing the operation.
Mm-hmm.
We were testing them in the classroom to see whether chefs could use them as they were doing demonstrations so the class could see what they were looking at.
Right.
So there are a lot of business applications. There could be, repairmen in the field and they've got a particular problem. They need a particular part or something. So they could dial in. Somebody could look at what they see.
Oh, that's the...
So,
you need to do Fetzer valve. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and so it turns out I think there's a niche market for these kind of things, but not for the consumer market. We just weren't ready for it. Now, of course, people always have, they can take pictures with their cell phone. They can take video with their cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of issues with cell phones, too, but you just don't wear the cell phone on your face.
You could,
you,
but you'd look really goofy.
You could. So they're hoping Tony Fadell is going to figure out what the niche market is.
Mm-hmm.
And then they think, and maybe next year they're going to release one. But they came out with a clever idea. So instead of beta testing it, and then paying people to beta test, they got people to pay them $1,500 to participate in the beta test. And there were enough nerds out there that were willing to pay $1,500 for the beta test. And I have to admit, I was one of them, and I was quite happy to be part of it, actually.
Well, you have the scientific mind.
I know.
And the wallet.
We actually didn't use it to see how it worked in the bar. We were trying to test it in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
But I would just wear it around just to see what it was like, and I didn't even like wearing it in the grocery store. Listen, we love your emails. Email us at techtalk@stratford.edu, and go to the Stratford University website, stratford.edu, and tell them that you heard about them on Tech Talk Radio.
Hey, if you tuned in later, we'd like to hear the show entirely again. It will replay at 12 noon today. See you next week.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT FM HD2 Manassas. This is Federal News Radio on the air at 1500. 1400 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. The Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, American University Eagles, Washington Nationals, and the Washington Capitals. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Now it's time for that. Hey, the Caps are on the air later today. Caps and the Dallas Stars, 7:45 pregame, 8 o'clock. The puck drops here on Federal News Radio. It is going to be sunny and cold today, highs mid-30s. Right now outside our studios in Northwest, it is clear, 24 degrees, 10 o'clock.